Okay, good morning to you all. Thank you very much indeed for attending today's presentation of 888 Holdings annual results for the year ended December 2011. It is my intention to keep the formal part of the presentation as brief as we can so we can throw the floor open for some questions. I have with me this morning, as normal, Aviad Kubrine, our long-established CFO, and also Itai Freiberger, our COO, who will in turn expand on their areas. What I would like to do, if I can, first of all, is look at some of the highlights of the year, and a year that I've got to say we're all incredibly proud of. The revenues are 26% up at 331 million. The EBITDA achievement of 46 million, up 94% on 2010. And it's our second highest performance of the company since flotation in 2005. The margins improved to 17% for the full year. That's up from 11% last year, 13% in the first half, and by calculation you can work out that our margins in the second half were a healthy 20%. We finished the year with 82 million of cash, 37 of it being corporate, and we generated 20 million of free cash after paying 46 million of acquisition costs associated with Wink and Mitopia. We have a record number of active players, and as at the year end, these stood at 480,000 active players for casino and poker alone. We have made significant payments to Wink vendors, which now saves us £500,000 of interest each month. As far as we're concerned, we're out of the woods on that one. That's yesterday's problem. We shouldn't really have any, hopefully no more questions on that. Overall, I think you'll agree, we had a very satisfactory year. So how did we achieve it? At the half year, sceptical that some of you may have been, I outlined our strategy for fostering improvement and ensuring we had a business which was fit and ready for growth. Well, we stuck to the knitting. We were not distracted. We stayed focused on the jobs we had to do. We have driven our B2C business through four key products: poker, casino, bingo and sport. And our growth has been delivered through volume. More players, higher average lifetime value, lower spends for levels of deposit. In other words, we have gone for high volume, low ticket. We have reviewed our cost base and have made savings, but were only where this would not damage our core business or hamper our future growth. We increased our dollar marketing spend, but achieved a lower marketing ratio by targeting higher return on capital campaigns and reducing our CPA. We invested in technology infrastructure, building a new casino client, enhancing our fully integrated marketing suite. We will continue to improve our platform as we see this as one of our key USPs. And we have been active in new markets, seizing the opportunities as they arise and pursuing all viable, licensed and regulated territories, albeit prioritising the markets depending upon anticipated revenue generation. We have appraised all of our B2B contracts and have terminated some and are currently negotiating with the potential of terminating other partners in order to cease the hemorrhaging and profit from this segment of our business. Lastly, we have stabilised Mitopia and are hopeful that this entity will achieve near break-even by the end of the year. Overall, as I said before, we've stuck to the knitting, and I hope you will agree we have delivered on the promises we made at the half year. None of this could ever have been done without the support and dedication of the staff and the management team. The senior managers are fully focused on delivery and have met the challenges head on at every occasion, raising their game to succeed. A team I feel very proud of being part of, and one which is more than fit to take us on to the next chapter and to embrace the new markets, which will be our lifeblood. Again, as I said at the half year, our new markets are a core strand of our strategy. The markets which we're active in today are Italy, where we launched in October 2011 with B2B partners, and our B2C site has captured a 5% market share of the casino market with relatively low investment and sensible CPAs. In Spain, we have developed a good working relationship with the regulator and have submitted our application for license. We have adapted our poker and casino platforms to be compliant and continue to work on our bingo platform, all to be available when eventually the regulator decides and is able to launch. In Germany, we are applying for a license and are working towards software compliance. This market is still in the state of flux, as no firm decision has yet been reached how the overall market will be structured. But we continue to collaborate with the regulator on timing and structure of launch, as this market is important, representing some 6% of our total income. The most exciting market opportunity for the industry must be that of the States. And we are definitely the prettiest girl in town, with everybody keen to have discussions with us. And that will be shown why on one of Itai's slides. We are uniquely positioned, having received a certificate of suitability in March, the only one currently issued to online gaming operators. This has positioned it well, as it fulfills one of three conditions which are required to become an online operator, the others being obtain an IGSP licence and also having a terrestrial gaming partner. We are currently in the licence application process with Nevada and are previously announced have extended our relationship with Caesars to operate the WSOP brand in the US. We have ticked all the boxes, or we hope we will, and in time for the Nevada launch, and should be the first to trade. The Caesars deal is great for us, as we are non-exclusive. We will have fully adapted software, a share in the revenues, whilst they are responsible for brand building and marketing spends, which in any market can be substantial. Furthermore, the non-exclusive agreement allows us to pursue other opportunities both on a B2C and B2B basis and exploit our software to the optimum. We are, however, cautious in our predictions for the US because presently there is only Nevada which has passed a bill legalising online poker, and Nevada has 3 million population. We're never going to get rich on that. New Jersey are proposing to put forward a similar bill, but no one is really sure of the timing or structure. And there are several other states that have indicated their willingness to follow suit, but no firm decisions have yet been forthcoming. A state-by-state implementation could be long and costly, whereas a federal bill will make for a much bigger impact. In any event, we are well positioned to exploit our award-winning technology and many quality partners and optimise our revenues. Lastly, let's have a little look what the future holds. Firstly, I am going to state quite solidly that we are committed to our core platform, our core business and our core markets. We see that the introduction of the new casino product, the way that we're operating our suite, an online marketing suite, the way that we've developed more side games for the bingo market, we still think there's an awful lot more to go for in our existing business. So our core business, we still see significant growth. We are committed to the Dragonfish platform and continue to discuss opportunity with significant players in this sector who share our business, our network ethics. As stated before, we are only really interested in dealing with clients who are committed to marketing their brands on our technology and pushing for growth and substantial revenue and profits. The regulatory framework. It's a core, as in our core markets, holds both opportunity and cost risk, particularly where tax regimes come hand in hand with licences. The tax burden imposed in these new markets has an impact on our financial structure, and this year we will see us regulated and taxed in Italy, Spain, Germany and Denmark. However, this is a short-term hit, as once we build these markets and gain strong presence, the revenues will be more secure and offer growth potential for the future. It has already been witnessed that when territories open up and advertising is legalised, markets can grow by up to 300%. A prime example of this was when Italy launched its poker network. The UK market must be highlighted here. Some 40% of our revenue is earned in this territory. The Chancellor announced in the budget last week that a period of consultation was pre-introduced, allowing operators to make representation as to the eventual style and structure of remote gaming. We will be active in this area and have already retained lobbyists to assist in this cause. The Chancellor did confirm, however, that the rate of tax would be as is for licensed operators, 15%, and implementation would be in December 2014. We see this as encouraging news, as the timescale to implementation should allow us to explore ways in which we can mitigate some of this cost burden, and also allows revenue growth to flow from immature markets, balancing our dependency on any one market. These immature markets we clearly define in two distinct categories. Europe, where we're actually driving brand awareness and the regulation is certain. And in the US, which is really the big blue ocean. No clarity on the shape or the timing of the big picture. Investment in Europe is essential to mould our future, gain good market share and bring substantial growth to revenues. The US is different. We will be one of the first operators in this market. But what will the market be? There's no doubt we want to be there and we'll capitalise on our growing reputation and quality technology. But we urge caution as to timing and quantity of profits realised from this market. Both of these markets are great opportunities for us to build a solid, successful global business in an industry which is becoming recognised as professional and grown up. This gives us confidence for the future as we continue with strong trading results and robust cash generation. It would therefore be our intention to return to the dividend list at the half year, but we will not do this at the expense of investment for future growth. I hope you have a flavour of our view of the business, both now and in the future, and I will now hand you over to Aviad, who will give you more details behind the numbers.
Thank you, Brian. Well, good morning, gentlemen. Let's scroll to page 9. I'll run through some of the highlights and I'll add some details on these. You know that the total revenue this year was 331, the highest we ever had, 26% increase in last year. Star performance was B2C, $284 million, a 28% increase. This is the highest our B2C has ever generated. The casino B2C grew 27%, again, to a record high of 148. This is the highest our casino has ever generated. The poker grew 58%, $61 million, getting close to the very highs of a few years ago. First-time depositors increased 55%, which is an incredibly strong and successful number for us. Active players, casino and poker, for the B2C, up 102%. The EBITDA, 94%, $56 million. It's $100,000 short of our highest since we exited the U.S. market. And the margin at 17%. And as Brian mentioned, if you look at H1 margin at 13%, the margin at H2 was 20%, which is very healthy indeed. Cash at year-end was $82 million. If you strip out customer liabilities, then corporate cash was $37 at the end of the year. Since then, we've made a significant payment of £20 million to Wink ahead of schedule to reduce interest. And as of a week ago, our corporate cash was $66 million. Again, if you reduce $45 million customer liabilities, after the Wink payment, we right now have a corporate cash of $21 million with only $6 million left to pay Wink in May. As Brian mentioned, hopefully this is the last time we mentioned this. Let's look at the P&L, and let's look at the OPEX. The OPEX increased from year to year, but actually the vast majority of that increase to $109 million is driven by volume-driven expenses, PSP, and chargebacks. The fixed element of that remained fairly stable, and I will break that down a bit later. R&D cost increased from $22 million to $30 million. The comparative here to 2010 is not exactly correct because we have the Mitopia expenses, which are all R&D, in this line, and we acquired Mitopia in May 2010. Hence, about half of this increase is attributable to Mitopia, and the rest is real increase in our R&D efforts. Selling and marketing, we have invested $102 million. This is the highest number we have ever spent on marketing in the company's history. However, the marketing ratio reduced from 35% to 31%, which is very healthy indeed. More about that later. Admin expenses did increase between the 2 years from 22 million to 28. The main result of this is professional expenses relating to the cleanup of the B2B business and penetrating the regulated markets. There's a new line on the P&L. We call it the gaming taxes and duties. It was a relatively small number in 2010. It was 7 million in 2011. And that number is here to stay and sadly will increase this year. Below the EBITDA line, there's no news about depreciation and amortization, but I do want to dwell on the interest, FX, and others. That's a significant number at 13 million, and I wanted to break it down for you, and that's important. Out of this number, 3.7 million is actual cash we paid as interest to the Wink vendors. Another 3.7 is totally non-cash element, which is a notional accounting, truing up the future nominal value of the Wink liability at year-end to the present value. It's a non-cash item. There's another element of 1.6 million, which is the fair value adjustment of the hedge, which we entered into to protect our position vis-a-vis the Wink liability, and another 4 million, which I call operational hedges, which we enter into in the ordinary course of business to hedge our non-dollar denominated expenses. Sometimes you win on these contracts, sometimes you lose, but whatever you win and lose, you lose a win on the underlying transaction, so economically it's a zero value. Taxation increased slightly from $2.7 to $3.9 million. This is a result of the newly introduced tax regime in Gibraltar. We paid about $1 million Gibraltar corporate tax for the first time. The next slide. A few operational metrics just to give you a presentation of what happened to the underlying business. This is the B2C daily average deposit growth. You can see that we've demonstrated 84% increase from July 2010. And as you know, deposits usually translate into revenue at a fairly stable rate. And this is where the phenomenal revenue growth is coming from. If you look at total revenue, again, just a historical presentation, we've stripped out all the U.S. revenue until 2010. So from $59 million out of the U.S., outside the U.S., to $331, represent 24% compound annual growth rate. Note that since 2010, we do have U.S. revenue, and that is from the social networks Mytopia. I'm jumping to slide 14, the geographical segmentation. Thank you. We've demonstrated revenue growth across all geographies. The UK, 20%. Europe, excluding UK, 28%. America's 55%. And the rest of the world, 31%. In terms of the mix, the UK's share went down from 49% to 46%. In terms of the revenue split by product, again, we've grown across all our product verticals. The casino up 27%, the poker 58%, the bingo 8% in a difficult and competitive market, and the emerging offering 33%. If you look at the quarterly growth rate of the B2C only, you can see that we have so far printed 5 consecutive quarterly revenue growth to $79 million in Q4, and I have good reason to believe that Q1 will continue that trend. If you look at the B2C revenue, again, the star performer on the semi-annual basis, you can see the 38% H2 2011 over and above H2 2010. I'm just going to jump to the B2B. The revenue of the B2B on slide 20. Again, if you look at the semi-annual growth, 16% half year over half year. Still very decent performance. The next slide, slide 21, you'll see only the 888 casino deposit trend. Again, 64% compared to July 2010. Phenomenal success. And on the poker, this number is 156% increase in deposits compared to July. EBITDA and EBITDA margin, as Brian mentioned, the margin in H2 increased to 20%. Therefore, we closed the year with 17% compared to 11% the year before. And that's a very, very impressive number indeed. Let's talk about marketing cost ratio. So as I said, whilst we have increased the marketing investment from $92 million a year before to $102, the highest we ever invested in marketing, the ratio reduced from 35 to 31%. This is a direct result of marketing efficiencies, of prudent approach, and the technological improvements that enable us to deliver this. Itai will talk a bit about the technology and the platform. It also means that we were able to implement successful CRM and retention, which actually drove revenue with relatively low marketing spend. Our CPA this year is lower than last year by about 10%. Let's look at the cost structure. We can see that the OPEX actually reduced in relative proportion to revenue from 37% to 33%. That's the bottom orange part of the chart. R&D increased slightly from 8.3% to 9% of revenue, and in absolute terms, I mentioned it went up from $22 million to $30 million. You can see here again the marketing ratio from 35% down to 31%. Admin remained relatively stable as percentage of revenue at 8.3%, and the gaming taxes at 2.2% of total revenue. Just a quick glance on the PSPs and chargebacks. We can see that we're pretty much within historical levels on both counts at 1% of chargebacks, 5.9% at PSPs. The reason this is slightly higher than last year is only because of Mytopia. As you know, Mytopia is on Facebook, and the Facebook platform charges 30%, which is way above our core business. That's the result of this increase. The next slide is the customer bonuses on the B2C casino. You can see that actually we have slightly reduced the bonuses from 18% ratio to 17%. Again, with such an impressive 27% revenue growth in the casino, this is a tribute to excellent CRM and retention work. On the poker, the ratio increased slightly from 8% to 11%. Nevertheless, we're very happy with this, with 58% revenue growth. We'll do this every year if we can. The next slide, which you've not seen before, is my attempt to demonstrate to you the underlying lifetime value of our customers actually increased. So what we did is we actually calculated the amount of revenue that new customers generate in actual form during their first 90 days since they joined. There's no forecasting error here. There's no biasing here. This is actual money generated. And if we base it at what it was in July 2010 as 100, you can see that over the last available 90 days, which is November, December, and January, the increase in casino is 42%, and in poker is 20%. So all sorts of questions about the output, which you see in the KPIs declining. I'm not concerned about this at all. This is the real number. Okay, now clearly if the revenue generated over the first 3 months has increased, I can tell you as a matter of fact that the revenue over the lifetime value also increased. So this is really hard evidence. There is no biasing error here or forecasting error. The next slide, I will try and explain a bit of our KPIs. What you see here is not our KPIs, but what you see here is an illustration which is taken on our 888 casino, which behaves similarly to our KPIs. So the bottom line, the blue line, you can see that the average revenue for player went down from Q1 2010 all the way to Q4. It's similar to what you see in our group KPIs. If you then look at the increase in number of active players, which is something like 200%, beginning to see what's going on here. If I then add another line, which is the average revenue per player that made deposits, in other words, I strip out customers that never made a deposit, they only played on a bonus, and I strip them out from the revenue and from, I don't count them as active, you can actually see a very stable revenue for paying customers. And the last line, which is the orange line, you can see that the deposit to unique depositor, in other words, those players actually make deposits, is positive and actually slightly upward sloping. So pretty much what I'm trying to say is, not all the pictures in the KPIs. The KPIs is a mathematical representation of dividing revenue by actives. And if one of them is moving faster than the other, you may get the wrong conclusion. But we're very happy with our underlying metrics. My last two slides, the balance sheet. The only two things about the balance sheets is, if you look at the contingent consideration, at the year end we had 37.4 million contingent consideration. That was mainly for Wink. As I mentioned, the vast majority of that now vanished and disappeared. Clearly there's no debt on this balance sheet. The next slide, and my last one, is going to be the cash flow statement. Let's look at the net cash generated from operating activities, $79 million, a very strong number indeed. How it was spent over the year, acquisitions during the year of Wink and Mytopia, $46 million. There was CapEx, about $5 million. And the interest, which I mentioned before, cash interest at 3.7. As a result of all of that, we increased the cash during the year by $20 million, and we finished with $82 million for the year. That's for me, and over to you, Itai.
Thank you, Aviad. During the last month, I get many people asking me, how did we pull this one off? How do we make such a significant change to our business? I'm sure that you all understand the real meaning behind these numbers. It's a transformation of the business. And the real answer for that question is that there is no one place that is actually the reason for that. And some of it you saw in the numbers. It's not a single campaign. It's not a single activity that we found a small blue ocean or blue lake, if you want to call it, and got some additional revenues. It's across the business. It's across all the KPIs. We broke every 888 record along last year. And every time we do this, we have a small celebration in the company, whether it's the number of active for a certain month, whether it's the number of depositors, the amount of deposits, daily deposits, etc., etc., etc. Low churn. So we actually worked out the entire KPIs of the business, which allowed us to actually invest more money in marketing with a high return, i.e. with a lower marketing ratio. And if you can do that, and if you can, usually when you invest more money in marketing, the result is a less effective marketing activity. However, in this case, we're able to spend more money and actually get more value out of every dollar that we spend. This is what we call a healthy growth, something that, we can potentially, if we sustain this, this will actually continue to drive the business forward. I will show you in a couple of slides how this looks from a customer's perspective. We actually create more energy to it. It's a closed cycle. It's actually feed himself, and I will show you a few graphs taken by captured from search engines and see how people actually actively search 888 more with regards to our different brands and compared to our different industry partners. Year-on-year poker in search came up over 200%. Casino came up 153%. And 888 as a brand came up for search over 93% more than last year. Some of the reasons why we were able to do that outside the very professional marketing team that we have in-house is our technology. We've completed during the last 2 years a complete overhaul of all of our core product portfolio. We've changed all the offerings, and I'm talking about the front end of the offerings, but I'm also talking about the back end, the platform itself. That platform actually allows us today to run more promotions and more activities that we were able to run in the past. It is a tool that aids us as opposed to something that creates a drag, which it was to be in the past. We will continue the development on the platform and on the core offerings. We've just launched a new casino, and I will talk about it in a minute. The future, I think, is in regulated markets. This is where we need to show that we're doing, that we can penetrate markets. And this is where the market's actually going. The first one was Italy, and Brian mentioned our market share there. I think the next report by the AMS will show that we actually grew this the market share. But I think the more interesting part, and this is information which is not, which is harder to acquire, is the what they call share of voice. It's the amount of money that we spend in order to reach the market share. And if you look at the whole market, you will see that we were very effective or relatively effective in reaching that market share. I would say that this is early days of a market. Early days of the market are very difficult from a financial perspective. Spain is coming next. Probably what they say is going to come toward the summer. And the U.S. is our is the next thing that is coming on. I think it's important to understand that when competitors or operators are going to compete against the U.S., it is not enough just to go and buy a platform. It is not enough just to go and acquire an offering. There are three or four major elements that you need to run an operation in America. It's a lot of money that you need to market your services. It's the technology that enables and powers your offering. It's the know-how, how to run that technology. It takes a lot of time to learn how to optimize and what to do with the tools that you have. And to a lesser degree, a brand. If you don't have, let's say, the first three, and you go into the starting line when the US opens, and you have other competitors with such capabilities, then you are going probably to fail. And the one operators, the few operators that has this ability, that has this know-how, that has this ability, such as 888, it has a much better starting point and what we call a pole position in the coming U.S. market. Since we have our own in-house technology platform or capabilities, we develop our own proprietary software. It costs us a lot of money, but we enjoy that. We also have our own marketing agency in-house. Again, something that costs us a lot of money. But both of them together allows us to control our destiny. We can decide if we want to invest now and go into Spain or the U.S. or a different market, to go into a different segment or to invest in a different place. We have the ability to decide how we want to steer the ship. And this is actually what we've been doing in the last year. And we plan to do this in the future. The last thing I would say, and that is regard the, again, the business feeds himself. The stronger B2C we have, the stronger B2B we have. The stronger they see our results in B2B, the more calls we get from people asking us if we're ready to offer them B2B services. And as Brian mentioned before, we are being very picky. We've actually completed what we call the cleanup, and we are moving into a more aggressive mode now of actually deciding which deals we want to take. It's not going to be a lot of deals, but we will pick up the deals that we think are the right one for the business. Our new casino, we've just launched it a couple of weeks ago. It is still now in deployment, so it's a bit tricky to give you guys an indication of how it's doing. We are launching it, or we are deploying it in a phased approach, so we don't just send it into the market. It is being done gradually. The whole feeling around this product is around the we call an HD experience. It's a kind of a gaming experience embedded inside the client itself. We're very happy with the result of that. It's a drag and drop, a full screen resolution. It is a very nice product. It comes together with a platform that we call GGP. That's our new gaming platform. That platform allows us actually to integrate third-party providers, to develop games on it, to have a centralized unit in which we can develop a game and send it to all of our offerings, whether they are casino, poker casino games, Facebook, etc. That is how we're going to have one unit to distribute the whole thing. We're going into mobile, as we feel mobile is probably the next thing that is going to create growth. We've developed an iOS for iPads and an Android version as well, and we're now deploying those versions. Again, the work on the core platform here is a substantial piece of our success in casino, and this is because of our ability to cross and to have much more effective CRM than we used to do in the past. This is a screenshot of the new casino client. Everything here is a drag and drop with tabs that allows you to play more games, multiple games at one point. It is a very nice piece of development, and we are very proud of it. This is an interesting slide, and I'm going to show you a few of them. This has been taken off Google. You can see search trends for casino, for 888 Casino in the UK. And the nice thing about it, other than the growth, which is very important, because this is at some point actually transfers into lower CPA, into a much stronger brand, and at the end of the day to revenues, you see that every campaign that we make does not go back to the same level that we used to have before the campaign. And we actually grow and grow from a campaign to a campaign. I will show you another graph, and you'll see a few competitors there. Well, they have this spike, and then they go back to the same point, which means they invest money, they get a return for their money, but they don't grow the business. And I think this is a very important element. It's a lot to do with the CRM, a lot to do with our ability to maintain players in the market, and that actually pays back. In poker, we are very, very proud in what we did in poker. We took a different strategy that pays off. We pushed the envelope on what we call We Play Different. We had some campaigns with external partners from different industries like LG and Ryanair. We have today, I think, the best poker application out there. We have, I think, the best network management in the industry. And we see the result, and I will show you in a minute what happened in a graph that I showed you a year ago, and you'll see half a year ago, and you'll see the effect on that. Again, here we're moving into mobile. We have an iOS and an Android version. Regulation is next for Poker 6, so we're going to take Poker 6 into regulations. Spain is probably going to be the next one, and the U.S. is another one, and people in America actually look at what we do in poker and they see how our poker is performing. And again, we get a lot of calls from a lot of Americans looking for different ways to partner using Poker 6. Last thing I would mention is a lot of work that we invest now in the infrastructure itself. We see this growth. We invest now a lot of efforts and a lot of money into building the infrastructure, the physical infrastructure, and the software infrastructure of the poker, something that you don't see, but it will allow us to have the platform a lot more redundant and a lot stronger to be able to cope with the future demands. This is a slide that we saw last time, which is exactly the same one, and we saw the industry here in red, and we saw us here in blue, and this is how it picked up since then. Again, very, very, very encouraging numbers. This is really something that we really, really proud of. This is something that is not done by many others. It is a real achievement by us to create not only a lot of liquidity, but also to create growth in revenues and to get more depositors, and then we can cross them into other offerings so we can make more money out of it. We have a very strong poker offering today. This is another interesting slide. This is Poker UK search trends. The two spikes that you see here This one is in April when Full Tilt and PokerStars got the DOJ notice, and this is when Full Tilt actually got closed by the DOJ. You see a lot of people actually searched for them. If you look here, you'll see that we actually overtook Full Tilt at the end, so we are today have more active searches than they actually look for Full Tilt. But if we'll remove the two, and so you can actually have a much better resolution, this is us, and you see the trend here is it's a lot stronger than the rest of the industry. This is not yet liquidity, or this is not yet revenues, but this is something that will turn out and will become revenues and liquidity in the next coming month. You see how we grow the business, and you see how people actually look for us. If you want to look at what I said to you before, this is, for example, a campaign that was made here by one competitor and another here. They start and they go back into a point, and I think this is one of our main achievements, to be able to grow the business. In bingo, saturated market, very difficult to operate in. We are one of the biggest here in UK. We still believe that there's a more value to extract from that business, and we're working now on the potential that we have within the business itself. It's less of a market share. It's more of being able to monetize on this market, and this is the activities that we invest today around bingo. I forgot to mention, I had a lot of slides in the middle with some icons about awards that we received along the way. So we received the Casino Operator of the Year and Bingo and Poker Operator of the Year, etc. So sorry for not mentioning that. Sport. I see sport is a blue ocean. There is still a lot of potential for us in sport. What we're doing now, right now, is preparing for the coming sports event in the UK and the Euro. I'm talking about the Olympics, of course, and monetizing our acquisition efforts that we've done in 2010 in the Euro. This is somewhere that we still have a lot of potential, and somewhere that we can, a business that we can grow. As B2B, Dragonfish, we've completed what we call the cleanup. We now have a much leaner but more focused B2B arm. We've launched casinos in Italy as an OBEC office casino with a few Italian operators. We've signed up with WSOP in the UK, as you know, and another one now in the US. We will sign up more deals under Dragonfish for the US. And I think regulated market is the future of Dragonfish, and this is where we're going to enjoy Dragonfish as an extra leverage in the coming future. So that is for me. Thank you very much.
Right, thank you both indeed, to Aviad and Itai, for opening the market up for questions. If I could just indulge and look at some key aspects of the presentation. Firstly, I would like to say how proud I am of being offered the opportunity to lead this successful and dynamic company into the future and to maximise on the opportunities which are available to us, and there are many of them. I will do this with all the commitment and dedication shown by the rest of the very talented management team. They are the best in the industry, and with all the qualities and drive to ensure that we'll always be able to meet the challenges, to innovate, and thus ensuring that we're always at the leading edge of the industry. We will continue to focus on our core products and our core markets, and anticipate good growth still to come from these. Our products are and will continue to be best in class. Our customers like them, enjoy the user experience, and continue to be very active on our sites. The first months of this year have continued to show robust trading, with revenues higher than those of the very successful Q4. Margins have been good, have other key indicators, and we continue to generate strong cash flows. Our exploration into new markets is going well. We are careful in choosing our partners, ensuring that they have strong credentials to match our leading-edge technology. We are focused on the delivery of tight and commercially sound contracts where we have every opportunity in extracting substantial revenues. We will not get seduced into becoming the biggest, just the most profitable. And lastly, we'll invest now for the long-term security and sustained growth in the company. We are ideally placed for the future and will continue to deliver not overpromise. Thank you very much indeed for all your time. And if you have any questions, fire away.
Hi, Vaughan Lewis from Morgan Stanley. Can we get an update on your view on M&A? Excuse me. Would you entertain any approaches at this point, or do you think you're sort of past that now? And at what point would you begin to get on the front foot and look for deals, particularly in regulating markets? I've got a couple more, shall we?
I think M&A is not on our agenda. We are not on our agenda at this moment in time. We believe there is significant growth organically. We do not believe that our current enterprise value represents our true value, and therefore we would not be interested in talking to people who do call us on a fairly regular basis. We are very happy with our potential growth and the way that we're going, and at this moment in time, it is not on our agenda. That's not to say that as new markets open and that our cash flow position is much stronger, that we would not entertain it in the future. But I do not foresee it as we sit here today.
Okay. If we look at your H2 EBITDA margin, which you focused on quite a lot of 20%, that already includes the duties in Spain and Italy, I believe, and marketing costs in Italy. So what are the swing factors that mean that you're not comfortable talking about 60, even 70 million of EBITDA this year, which, you know, the H2 run rate's obviously 70 million, including those factors?
Two things. Shall I start off and then I'll hand over to Avian? You shouldn't underestimate the additional marketing spend we will employ in Italy and in Spain, as well as the taxation in those two territories. It is important for us for the future of our business to ensure that we get a good foothold in those markets. Abiyad.
I just want to add to that actually some of your colleagues already increased the forecast for 2012. And I would agree that the pressure or the risk on the previous forecast for 12 was certainly for the upside. But as Brian said, we prefer to under-promise and over-deliver. And in the fullness of time, with the development of the business, we'll be delighted to increase the forecast and to suggest higher. So I think it's just a bit early in the day for that.
Okay, and just one on the cash flow. The working capital inflow looks like it's very big. Is that a one-off? What have you done, and does that reverse? Or?
It's totally a snapshot. You know, we don't manage it in an active basis. What we did manage on an active basis is actually to reduce the capex during the year. It was 5 million compared to more than 8 last year. That was a conscious decision. The working capital will fluctuate, but there's no magic in it.
Does it reverse then, or is that a step change?
Some of it can reverse, and it really depends on the cut-off date of the balance sheet. There's no magic in it, and there's no accrual for any particular creditor there.
Thanks. Ivor Jones from Numis. A couple of things on B2B. Even though you're talking about refining your approach, revenues grew quite strongly. And following on from that, poker's doing really well. So are there people approaching you who want to be B2B partners in poker outside the US?
Yeah, yes, there are. There are. And we are very selective.
And so why is B2B growing even though you're trimming customers and refining that business?
It's because B2B today is mostly bingo. And when we talk about the growth of Dragonfish, it's actually outside bingo, mostly into casino and poker. So the bingo is growing. We have it, and it will probably continue to go this way. But an exponential growth will come from adding additional services.
But B2B grew in FY11, so was that because you had fewer customers, but just strong performance from the people?
It actually shows that the cleanup that we've done, or the work that we've done in B2B, and there's a lot of work that was put into that, was actually not generating revenues. Right. So after the cleanup, we still grow, and we made a lot of effort, a lot of work was done there.
So is B2B still going to grow in FY11 as a result of that?
It will grow in bingo, and if we'll add the right type of players or partners, they can grow outside bingo as well.
Okay. you talked about the UK's share of revenue. Given the amount of bingo and the competitiveness, should we assume that the UK is less profitable than the group average?
I'd say that the UK actually has slightly lower contribution compared to outside of the UK, and the reason that we are allowed to publish on television in the UK, that's quite a rarity in our industry, and we do use it. And because it's very expensive, the contribution ratio is slightly lower in the UK compared to other markets.
And so the other side of that, the extra efficiency that you've got out of marketing spend, is any of that to do with a geographical shift to markets where marketing's currently much cheaper, but we should worry about it getting more expensive in the future?
No, it's across the board.
So it's not a spread effect?
No.
Were all the numbers that you showed us, including Mytopia?
Yes.
The revenue growth year on year?
Yes.
Et cetera. Is there a chance that business making a profit?
As Brian mentioned, we hope to bring it to a break even in the second half. It is still losing a bit now.
So what's being done? Because there are Facebook-facing businesses being sold for hundreds of millions of dollars. Is this the thing you're keeping secret? Is there an inflection point coming where suddenly this too develops a game for drawing pictures of cows and is worth hundreds of millions of dollars?
I mean, I think the two points there, I will talk you through sort of the operational issues. But in terms of valuation, valuations, as you're all aware, do not necessarily reflect profit growth. We find it quite amazing that Double Down and Playticker were sold at levels that they were sold at and not actually achieving any profit. So maybe we're sitting on a gold mine at this moment in time. We don't look at it that way.
But how much are you doing to extract the gold?
What do you mean? How much are we doing? Or what are we doing?
How much are you doing investing in Mytopia to actually turn it into a real business?
A lot. There are many people that work there. And I think what we did in Mytopia during the last year is very similar to what we did with the rest of the company. It's actually focusing. There were many activities that we had to put aside and said, it's very interesting, it's very nice, but we can't do it because we can't do so many things. And we're focusing on our core area, which is gaming, and we're pushing through that way. So we have Bingo Island, which is being very successful. And we are now launching on top of that additional services in Mytopia. We just launched a slot offering, and we're working in a way to be able to grow the company in the direction that we feel is the right strategy.
So if I look at the write-off of the acquisition cost down to zero, it's not right to think of the business being written down to zero. There's still headcount being applied to it.
No, not at all. And in fact, I did make that point, I think, at the half year, and I'll make it again today. We may well have written off the asset. We haven't thrown away the keys. This business has got a focus, has got a life of its own. It's not our core competency. We have changed the management in that business. We have given it much more of a gaming slant. We will rationalise the cost by closing their offices and bringing it into our facility in Herzliya. We will take some steps to rationalise it. But as far as we're concerned, the business still has the ability to grow, and it's still being given the attention that it needs to put it on track to become break-even and profitable.
OK, and just last one from me. What's happened to mobile? Because there've been plenty of presentations from 888 in the past about joint ventures in mobile. I remember a relationship with Selectivity to develop mobile some years ago. Yeah. You should be announcing multi-100% growth in mobile revenues by now, and yet you're only talking about launching products in the future.
The market in mobile actually changed since the day of Selectivity and the rest of them. It's smartphone. The market is dominated by Apple with the App Store or the market in Android. It's a different setting. We need to go through them in order to launch our products. This is not a simple task when you talk about gaming. It is, by the way, an upside when you talk about regulated market. It's easier, or it's actually only available in regulated markets to launch the games. I have here casino and poker in each of my devices, whether an iPhone or an iPad or an Android. So it is available. Android is already being part of our offering. People actually start to play it. We feel it. We see it. But it's not yet a significant part of our business. Outside sport, in which a substantial percentage out of our bets is already being wagered through a handheld device.
But why is 888 so far behind the competition?
I'm not sure we are fine behind. I'm not familiar with anyone outside sport. Put aside sport, and in sport we're doing quite well there. Outside sport, poker and casino, I haven't seen anyone who gets, you know, a very significant part of his business in mobile yet. It will happen, and we're there. We have all the applications are there. Our platform actually allows us, this core platform, some of the things that we did was to extract it into mobile so we can cross from mobile to core. We have the ability to do it. The market will happen. It will happen. There's no question about it. And we are there. I don't think we are behind anywhere on that.
It's James Hollins from Investec. Just first up on retention levels, clearly you've been targeting the high volume, low ticket customers for some time now. Can you just tell us what has happened to retention, whether you're happy with it? Obviously, I assume it's come down a bit, but a bit of detail on that. The second one would be on the marketing ratio, 31%, I think was the figure. What sort of level should we be looking at for this year? Obviously, you're talking about Italy and Spain being quite aggressive. And the final one is just a reminder for me. Is the Caesars WSOP, is it been launched free to play in the US?
Yeah. First of all, the marketing ratio, it will increase slightly this year. And the reason is, as Brian mentioned, the investment in regulated market, notably Italy and Spain, where marketing ratios are much higher than this to gain the appropriate market share. So I think a good estimate is going to be 33%, give or take half a percent or percent, but that's where it's going to be. It's not going to be 35, I'm quite sure. In terms of the retention levels, I actually attempted to bring a slide that will show you retention levels and some of the CRM measures, but they're not very presentable slides and some of them are sensitive. But what I can tell you is that once you strip out the customer that comes to play on a free $5 on the casino, once you strip out these, the underlying retention sees improvement across the board. So we have lower OTD ratios, or OTDs as one-time depositors. We certainly see monotonously going down churn graphs across the board. And it's quite amazing because it's one of the reasons why the marketing ratio went down and revenue is so high. It's really one of the underlying building blocks on how you achieve that. And it's done through the technological platform, CRM management, a lot of hard work. As for demo WSOP in the US, I can't remember.
What was the question?
Demo WSOP in the US.
Yes.
Is it up and running?
Yeah, it is running.
How long has it been?
How well or how long?
How well for a demo? It's a demo.
So we can't get excited about it too much. But it's running. And I think the US is yet to be seen, or we don't know how it's actually going to happen. I'm not personally a strong believer in demo services to be launched before. I don't think that this is a very strong USP in the future. But we have Caesars as a massive partner in America. We'll have a few more. We will be there. We will be a very strong player in that market.
Thanks. It's Simon French from Panmure Gordon. Three questions for me, please. Just on Nevada, can you give us an update on the timeline for being granted a license, please? Can you remind us where you are in Denmark with your license application? And finally, on the dividend, Brian, you sort of indicated a return to an interim dividend payment. Can you remind us sort of what your views are on payout ratios, please?
First of all, I think I'm going to leave. Itai to talk about Denmark because he just flew back in from Denmark last night, so he's got the information hot off the press. In terms of Nevada, license applications have gone in. The process is as long as Nevada will take. They are recognized as the strictest regulatory regime in the world. I could just say that the job of filling in 69 pages with everything, including your inside leg, was really quite torturous. I just hope we're able to sort of get on to the next stage. I think if the filling in of the application form was quite severe, I'm told that the interviews are even more severe. So, listen, we are we are where we are. We are very friendly with Chairman Liparelli. We talk to these guys all the time, Itai and Itai's team, with Nevada, helping them sort out regulation. I think we're in a pretty good position. And it is my belief that we should be ready in time for introduction of regulation. Other than that, Simon, how long is a piece of string?
I will add one point. There is still a lot of work for them in Nevada to take, selecting a testing lab and then training that testing lab and then getting the testing lab to test that. So it's not happening tomorrow. Some say it's going to happen till the end of the year. And I imagine that until then you'll have a few more that will come in as well. So it's definitely a state by state. The timing is unknown.
You mentioned that Nevada's only got 3 million residents, but it also has 50 million tourists visiting it a year. What's your understanding on the regulations whereby a British guy going to Nevada could play online poker?
My understanding is that
you have to be a resident.
Intra-state. I think, is it not true to say that if you're a registered resident outside, you can't play, even though you're in Nevada, but you could play if you're a Nevada resident and you're visiting New York. Something is bizarre. That's why I say, please, it really is a great opportunity, but we don't really know the shape of how it will pan out. In terms of the dividend, we would like to resume a dividend at the half year. It won't be a big dividend. It will be a notional statement. If, however, it compromises our growth opportunities and investments, in other words, if the US came on stream quicker than we thought, we may choose not to pay a dividend. We're not doing it purely and simply for dressing the window. We would like to do it, genuinely like to do that, but it can't be at the expense of growth. Itai, Denmark.
Yes, I actually came back on Thursday. I met the new Spanish regulator, and yesterday the new Danish regulator. From our perspective, Denmark is only a matter of priority. While we need to make a decision, whether we invest now in the States, in America, and there's a lot to do there, in Spain and in other places, in our core platform, which we know that provide the outcome that we so much desire, and you see today. And launching in Denmark, we have a license. We still have an opportunity to launch there. It's only a question of when we can get our technical resources to work with the local entities in order to integrate a couple of systems, and we can launch. It's interesting, very interesting to see the graphs that I showed you before on the UK. In Denmark, we are far beyond the rest of the market again. So we have a very good base to start with. And the sooner we do it, the better. But it, again, at the end of the day, it is a small market.
Morning, Rich Carter from Deutsche Bank. I've got quite a few questions. Firstly, in terms of the cost of sales, can you sort of just break that down in terms of costs per country, if possible, just to give us a rough idea? And if not, can you tell us what percentage Spain and Italy was in terms of revenue in 2011. In terms of R&D expense, that increased 5 million half over half. Obviously, you're talking about regulated markets, so I assume you're going to have to invest that cost. I assume is going to go through R&D. So is 17 million a reasonable run rate to assume going forward, and do we need to add some growth onto that? So there's obviously potential material increase in the R&D expense. CapEx, it seems very low to me. What do you think we should think about in terms of CapEx moving forward? I mean, it seems unsustainable if you're talking about all this investment to be spending a sort of 8 million per year. I think Brian talked about B2B hemorrhaging EBIT just initially. So can you just give us an idea of B2B in terms of what you did last year in terms of was it losing money, what happened in H2, so we've got some sort of delta in terms of what potentially could happen in 2012. And if possible, could you give us an idea of how much Mitopia lost last year?
I think we're going to ask Avia to field a lot of these. I'll come back on the B2B quick. They're all numbers, so Avia, far away.
Okay, let's start with the CapEx. I agree with you, 2011 was a lean year in terms of CapEx, and as I mentioned, it was our own decision. It was designed to make sure we pay our debt. This year, I assume it's going to be in the region of $10 million, slightly higher than the historical eight, and the reason is that we're actually completing a fully real-time disaster recovery site. That's your CapEx question. The R&D question, you mentioned $17 million run rate in H2. I think this run rate is pretty much here to stay. As I mentioned, it was higher than the last year because of the comparative was only for 6.5 months for 2010. All of Mitopia is R&D. So that's that. So I think $32 to $34 million of R&D.
Where does the cost in terms of new regulated markets go in terms of having to update your systems?
Well,
is that going through R&D? Is that
part of it will be in R&D and part of it will be capitalized depending on the nature of the development.
Okay, so in H2, did you do Spain? Have you done these markets, or is that still work in progress?
No, we have. Spain is nearly finished, but it's still there's some things to do about it. Italy is obviously finished because it's launched.
And Germany?
Germany, we haven't done anything. We are in the process of applying for a license in Schleswig-Holstein. In terms of the technological development, we haven't incurred any yet. It's pretty unclear exactly what needs to be done. We're in constant discussions with the local officials about what needs to be done. I think there's still significant in clarity, but there's no doubt we will apply. Spain last year was roughly 4% of our revenue. Italy was probably half than that. You wanted a breakdown of cost of sales by geography. Well,
but just roughly.
We don't manage the business by geography. And therefore...
I can do it from... I mean, in terms of Italy and Spain, how much of the 7.3 was Italy and Spain?
I would distribute it pro rata. The only thing, of course, it's not cost of sales, is that the marketing ratio in Italy is very, very high indeed in order to capture market share. It's nowhere near the 31%. Much higher than that. And you asked about Mitopia loss. We don't give these numbers specifically, but let's say a few single millions of dollars for the year.
And you said you're hoping that'll be break even in H2. So
yes.
Again, losing in H1, break even in H2.
We will lose a small amount in H1. And
so
yes.
Year flat. So what, for the whole year, just slight loss?
Well, let me give you an example. Since we made some changes to the business from July to now, we doubled the revenue in Mitopia. As Itai mentioned, there's going to be cost rationalization. The management has changed, so we're working in both directions, and I think bringing it to break even towards the end of the year is achievable.
Okay.
It's our goal. To bring it to break even.
Okay.
And to get to break even, we are aiming for driving top line. So we're not going to just go on and say, well, we're nowhere near break even, cut the costs, ruin it. The business is here, it's part of our overall portfolio, and we are doing all we can with the management and the team to drive volume. But don't forget, as Avi had said, there is 30% straight out in terms of PSP through the likes of Facebook. So, you've got to drive a hell of a lot more volume to let that fall through to the bottom line.
So when we come to interims, are you actually going to have some slides on it? Because we haven't got any information on this business.
Sorry, sir.
Are we going to have some slides on this company, on this business, when you come to the interims?
For you, Richard, we will.
When it becomes significant, I think you're absolutely right. At this moment in time, it is something which we're keeping in our armory for the future. And we genuinely think that there is a future in social network. But at the moment, we're not aiming to see it as being a major profit contributor.
And does B2B contribute profit?
I don't know.
Does B2B contribute profit?
Yeah. I mean, I think it would be...
The answer is yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Answer is yes.
Through Bingo.
But there are several contracts still in there that
are
loss-making.
There are contracts which we have in place which we may not choose to terminate, because strategically they are very valuable for us.
Okay. But I don't think there is a single contract now after the cleanup that we're losing money on.
Okay.
If that answers your question.
Yeah, and just finally, can I just ask you a question in terms of UK tax? In terms of the 15% gross profit tax, is it your understanding that you're able to net off bonuses?
The way the tax legislation is drafted at the moment, bonuses will be treated as income. One of the issues which I sit part-time as chairman of the Bingo Association, and I've been working quite a lot with the DCMS and also the Treasury on MGD cash match bonuses, which I think are very similar to our bonuses, are considered to be a cost of sale. And therefore, if we actually see, as Chloe Smith has indicated, she wants to harmonise some of the rules, I hope we will see bonuses becoming a cost of sale. If bonuses don't become a cost of sale, everybody who's in the bingo industry will have an exceptionally tough time.
I mean, doesn't it sort of make the bingo business almost loss-making?
I think it brings into question
the
viability of bingo. Model.
And on the casino, it would make life tough as well.
Yeah, well, in casino, the bonus ratio, as you saw on the board, is much, much lower than on the bingo. On the bingo, it's much higher. So the business model in bingo will have to adapt across the industry.
Casino is always, 20-odd%, and poker is about 10%?
Roughly, yeah.
So is it still roughly that metric?
Yeah, well, it's 17 and 11, but yeah.
Okay, fine. Okay.
Just a couple of questions, but a follow-up on that, on the point of consumption tax. I mean, clearly you've got 3 years heads up now to start sort of repositioning or thinking about repositioning the business subject to what happens with bingo bonuses. You know, aside of growing the non-UK business, what can you actually do in the UK to offset some of that tax, and where would you be looking to make those savings? And on a second point, sport, which you highlight as an opportunity, is this simply an evolution of your sports business, or can we at some point expect to see perhaps a step change in that business?
The first question?
I'll do the first, you'll do the sport.
Okay.
Start with the sport.
Sport. There are so many things for us to do in sport. We're actually evaluating now what would be the best way forward to do it. We were able to make sport a positive contributor to the business, which is not trivial, and this is what it is right now. And I think we need to wait a little bit, and then we can make a few decisions on how we're actually going to work our sport and which direction we want to take it, which territories we want to invest in, etc. Okay, so I can't say much now.
Do you have any sort of grander ambitions with that sports business, or is it simply just going to be a sort of a smaller, profitable revenue stream?
Let's put it this way. Don't expect us to become Ladbrokes and William Hill. But I think there is a lot of potential there. And we see it every time we do something. We get we get a return. So we see the good feedback. And I think given our platform today, when we bring a sport player, which sport CPA is significantly lower than, say, a casino or a poker player, and we can drive them, and we do this a lot more effectively, we can drive them into the rest of the system, I think this is where the potential is, and this is where we'd like to focus.
UK tax. There's a number of things we can do as an operator to mitigate the impact of tax. Number one is indeed bonuses. We are going to have to reduce the bonuses we give to customers, or give them other benefits which will not be called bonuses and will not be subject to the GGR tax. We can play with pricing. In other words, we will change the edge on the casino and on the other games to compensate for some of this tax. And obviously, we will change some of the marketing metrics, because clearly we're not going to pay the same CPA if the lifetime value that we see after tax has been reduced. I'm not saying there will be no impact on us. There will be an impact. But there's a lot of time to deal with that. And actually, when the DCMS announced almost a year ago about the intention to do this, we actually created in the company a task force. Its sole aim was actually to go through all the potential measures that we can do and implement in order to mitigate this. We came up with 44 action points
that we can do, whatever the number was. And then actually, for some of them, we decided, well, some of them we can implement now. Why do we wait? And some of them, you've seen the fruits during this year. Some of them require longer technological development. But there's a lot of time to deal with this, to plan ahead. You know, there's no way we will suffer that gross number as a hit.
There is a concern that we have, and we need to press DCMS on this, and that is there has to be enforcement. As soon as it becomes open warfare, anybody who's licensed is going to be disadvantaged from the grey market. And that is something I'm not totally sure DCMS understand. If it's not enforced, we will be disadvantaged. Because if we change our pricing, if we change any of our structure, we will be in playing in a totally unfair market. So, you know, it's something that we are on the case with. We've got our lobbyists working on that. I think we've got allies in the bookies who have been truly shafted by 20% MGD. So I don't think, as big employers in the UK, they will want the government to impose huge tax concerns for them. And don't forget, William Hill, Ladbrokes must see 60% of their online business coming out, and they're still sheltered in Gibraltar coming out of the UK. So I think we've got a good set of allies to have a go at it.
You mentioned it, having met the Spanish regulator. I just wondered if you can update us on where you think the timing is for the Spanish process and whether you are leading with, planning to lead with poker or casino, or how you're marketing thrusts will be, and in terms of the overall marketing spend, if the license process goes the way you're thinking, are we looking to a big Q3 campaign for the autumn?
All right. Time perspective. He said not before summer. They have a lot of things still they need to accomplish before they can launch the regulation. I'm talking some of, you know, logistical things like hiring more people and moving an office and doing stuff that takes time, especially for a government agency. So I expect it to happen in the coming this year. I don't know exactly when, but it's not going to happen in the next few months, at least my interpretation of that. Investing in that market, we will launch casino and poker. This would be the first Poker 6 regulated launch. Everything is actually already in place and ready. We were planning on an April launch, and that's why we made everything required in order to be ready in April. I don't think that we'll have a very strong campaign in Q3, especially not in Spain. But I think we'll start probably around winter to be more aggressive there. But it is in the plan, it's in the numbers. And again, a new regulated market, a new child. It's going to be interesting.
Morning, Simon Davis from Canaccord. Just two questions from me. Firstly, now that we no longer have to talk about Wink payments, are bolt-on acquisitions moving back onto the agenda? And specifically, do you think you can achieve your strategic ambitions in social, mobile and sports gaming without bolt-on acquisitions? And the second question is just regarding Germany. You said you're going to apply for a license in Schleswig-Holstein. What is your sense in terms of the time frame for the launch of that marketplace? And do you see it as providing you with a platform to sell into the entirety of Germany?
In terms of M&A activity, I will just repeat what I think I said earlier, which is it is not on the agenda. We don't need bolt-on acquisitions. We have a strong B2B platform for bringing in partners in local markets, and they are very good people to have on board because they know the culture, they know what the customer base is looking for. So it is a strategy to involve local partnerships. In terms of other acquisitions, it is not any interest to us at all at this moment. We are growing our business organically. We are successful in the way that we have pushed our business. So I do not see us actually embracing anything in the acquisition mode at the moment.
So mobile, you're comfortable with the platform you're building, and you think
at this moment in time we're more than capable platform with the advances being made in mobile technology.
If you're interested, when we finish, I can let you play a little bit some casino and poker on some handheld device. You'll see that there's nothing else that you need, just the market to pick it up.
Sorry, what was the other question?
Germany.
Germany.
As far as I know, the process of granting the licenses is fairly near. I think the ambition to do it in March is fading, but it is fairly imminent. Our advice is that whilst there is some ambiguity or unclarity about the two potential parallel regimes, is that we will be able to take bets from other lenders, although the expected situation is that the other lenders will try and attack that. So I think that we're in legal limbo in Germany until further notice, and that was obviously strengthened by the criticism the 15 Lenders Treaty received from the EU a couple of weeks ago.
Is that it? Great, thank you very much indeed. And also, thank you very much for being relatively lenient on the questions. I think we can actually go away relatively relaxed. Thank you all very much for coming along today.